A great labor. Mrs. Conklin, I was married. This is my last year in Johns Hopkins. I was married. Mrs. Conklin was my amanuensis. And she wrote it all out for me, as I dictated it. And I submitted it all to Brooks with the plates. I had 8 or 10 plates made with pen and ink. And Brooks took it home with him, kept it for several days, brought it back. Well, he said, Conklin, I don't know what to say about this. He said, I don't know where in the world you can ever print this. There's no place. We have no money. Morgan has used up all the money allotted to the biology department. And in his work on pycnogonids, and he said, we've got no money. We can't help you in printing it. And we've got to have 100 copies as a thesis. I don't know where in the world you can print it. Furthermore, he said, I don't know that it's worth printing. He said, there is no morphological importance in the mere duplication of parts. Cell division is merely a duplication of parts, and there's no morphological significance in it. That was his thesis. Well, the result was that he came back to see me after several. Well, the result was that he came back to see me after several interviews, in which there were always a half dozen students in the room. We didn't have individual rooms. We were all thrown together, our graduate students. And finally he came back and he said, well, Morgan Conklin, I've decided that this university has given doctor's degrees for counting words in ancient languages, for counting words. I don't know why they might not give one degree for counting cells. Well, that ended it, and it was accepted for a doctoral thesis. And a preliminary note did appear at that time. And I sent a note to the Anatomischer Anzeiger, which had published it, on the early cleavage of the egg of Crepidula, with this definite separation of the germinal layer material into these few cells. Well, it was better regarded by the public than by Brooks. And I went back to Johns Hopkins in 1891 to the same table at the Fish Commission to continue the work to a later stage of the development. And one of the first few weeks at Woods Hole, I was wrong in saying I had met Wilson at the previous summer. I hadn't. I had never met Wilson until my second summer at Woods Hole. And Watersey, who was a graduate student at the Johns Hopkins and who knew about my work, told Wilson of what I was doing. Well, Wilson was intensely interested, and he asked, sent word over asking to make an appointment for the next Sunday morning. And on Sunday morning next, he came over with his drawings of the cell lineage of Nereus. Of course, it wasn't called that. The cell lineage of Nereus was one of the later things in the development of the paper. Well, I never spent such a forenoon in my life as I did that forenoon with Wilson. And we went over these things, the whole of the ectoderm in 12 cells, the same in Nereus, but in Crepidula, spread out on a plate, in Nereus in a sphere, much more difficult to follow. So much plainer in Crepidula, everything out on a plate. And finally, the mesoderm in one cell, the 4D cell. Well, that simply capped the climax. And then, of course, we were following the individual ectomeres, the various cells, as far as we could. And I gave, well, Wilson had just been appointed to his position at Columbia University. He had been for 5 years professor of biology at Johns Hopkins University. At Bryn Mawr College. And was greatly admired there as a teacher. He was a prince of teachers. And he had just gone to Columbia with the understanding that his first year was to be spent in Europe. And I had made arrangements just before I got my doctor's degree to go out to the Ohio Wesleyan University, my old college where I had graduated 6 years before and had taught for 3 years in the interval, and then had spent 3 years at Johns Hopkins. I had made arrangements to go there and start a laboratory, they had no laboratory, of biology. I had to equip everything, take a bare room, get tables, and put in sinks and lockers and all that sort of thing. And I had to organize. I didn't have to, but I thought I ought to. I had a great idea of getting things started in a pretty good way. And I had advanced students who knew a good deal of biology, especially Harold Heath, who was the finest sort of an assistant. And I had to provide advanced courses for him in zoology and for half a dozen others. And the result of it was that to fit my work into the old college curriculum, to which there had been added not a single professor in more than 20 years, I was the first man in 20 years to be added to the faculty as a professor. Well, everything was terribly backward, awfully hard work, and that was my first duty, and I worked at it as hard as any man ever worked at anything. And I got the work going well. But by going back to Woods Hole, I kept in touch with research. And this second summer, and the contact with Wilson brought me in contact with Whitman. And Whitman had me in for a half day. And he said, he solved one of my problems at once. He said, I want that for the Journal of Morphology, which was the finest publication in morphology in the world at that time. My goodness, that took my breath. He said, I want you to do that work over, making it as perfect as it can be made. Don't spare the time or the labor. And we'll print it, and we'll give you the finest lithographic illustrations. Well, I tell you what, I worked at that. And the result was that I was the whole of that summer of 91. When Wilson and I were both at Woods Hole, I was getting my paper into shape. And during the following winter and spring, and 1892, the work went ahead and grew and grew and grew. I was afraid that it would be turned down. It was bigger than it need have been. There's just no question. It could have been cut down. But it turned out to be some 240 or 250 printed pages in length, with 9 lithographic plates in 3 or 4 colors. And it was a book. It literally was a book, occupied a full number of the Journal of Morphology, and was one of the things that caused the collapse of the journal. Well, then the question was to get it printed, and Ginn and Company, in spite of the fact that the plates were all made by Werner and Winter, I don't know that they were made before 1893, but about that time they were made, and I had the proofs, but Ginn and Company said they would lose $2,000 on printing that number. And they couldn't afford it. And in the meantime, I did everything I could to increase the subscriptions to the Journal of Morphology and to do what I could to help Ginn and Company in their difficulties. Whitman took no interest in such things. He said to me on one occasion, when I said, my goodness, Whitman, that'll take a mint of money. Great God, he said, what's money for? That was his attitude. And it was a pretty good attitude.
We ought to tie you up.
Well, that's a good chapter. I don't know. Are you taking that up?
Yes, it's all
well. Over.